What up, Dinks? It is Movember, aka November, for those keeping score at home.
Yeah, and the birth month of myself and Father Shrink, Drew Westfall.
I know that's right.
It's a glorious month. We love the month of November.
You know what else comes in November? It's the awareness that we all should and need to have about men's health. And we're partnering with none other than the Movember Foundation, like the world's leader charity in men's health.
Capital M, Movember.
Capital M, men.
Y'all remember in the early aughts when people were getting mustache tattoos, like on their fingers, mm-hmm. and like mustaches became all the rage? Y'all have Movember to thank for that.
Is that true?
They started the wave. And now, like, it becomes like a talking point. When you see somebody with like a thick ass mustache, you're like, hey, what's going on with that? Like, what are you, just like hipster, or like
raising money, or
yeah, you raise it? Yeah, exactly. Whatever. You raising money. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Thank you, Movember.
Thanks, Movember.
So Movember has a ton of resources for men's health, for mental health, for prostate, testicular cancer, all in one site, one package. They even have an app.
Whoa.
And it's good. It works. It don't glitch. It don't crash.
I love that. I'm gonna download the app right
now. You should. Dinks, if you're listening, get your phone out right now. Pause this episode and go download the Movember app. Tons of resources in there for you.
Today on Group Golf Therapy, you probably clicked on this episode for one man and one man only. Let's be honest.
It's not me.
It's not us.
It ain't me.
We have a very, very special guest on Group Golf Therapy on the couch this morning. Monsieur Movember Ambassador Phil Dunster. You probably know him as Jamie Tart from Ted Lasso. Just high alert right now. Because of the ongoing SAG-AFTRA strike, we're not allowed to actively talk about Ted Lasso or any other studio project that Phil Dunster is involved in. However, that gives us the perfect GGT opportunity to get in there and talk about the man himself, Mr. Phil Dunster. So stoked. This was a really fun, lovely conversation. He is incredibly charming, so sweet, so intelligent, so emotionally available. I'm a puddle.
Same.
A nice man.
What a nice man.
He's a lad's lad.
If you want more information about our involvement with Movember and potentially want to give over some of that coin that you have jingling around in your pockets, hit the link in our show notes, hit the link in our Instagram bio. That'll take you right to where you need to go to support our specific campaign that we're running with Movember. And for the meantime, enjoy this conversation with Phil Dunster right now.
There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
Bust it. Hi, Phil.
Hey, dude. How you doing?
Well,
I'm doing great.
It's good to see you. Nice to meet you.
Good to see you guys, too. It's nice to meet you guys as well. Nice to meet you guys as well. I'm just going to come straight off the bat, or off the club.
Come on.
My knowledge on golf is going to be so disappointing for you guys. Sorry.
No, you know what? We got a heads up that you're a beginner golfer, and that excites us so much.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Because this is a golf podcast masquerading as a mental health podcast. I'm sorry. The other way around. We're a mental health podcast masquerading as a golf podcast.
Sure. Yeah. It's like the very notion of going to golf and pretending that it's not just an opportunity to drink and, you know, I don't know, see you, mate.
Hey, for some people, it absolutely is, you know, and more power to you.
Yeah. Drink water or whatever it is you want to drink, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Hydrated.
Couple pops.
Drink air. I famously don't drink or eat anything when I'm on the golf course, much to the demise of my physical health. By the 14th hole, I'm like a shell of a person.
You've become emaciated.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's bad. I need resuscitation immediately.
Get this man a sweet tart.
Okay, so we won't talk about golf.
We can talk about golf. You can inform me about golf. Why don't you tell me the things that you're like, oh, man, because I'm at the start. a trepidatious beginning of my golf journey. You can do the thing of putting a virtual arm around my shoulder and be like, these are the things that you need to know, my friend. Maybe that.
We can do that. But we also love to hear from beginners about how they're perceiving the world of golf with new eyes, especially since golf has this kind of like cultural stigma sometimes. It's just like loaded for people. So It'll be interesting to hear from your side, like how you're engaging with the sport as a new player. Also, acknowledge that SAG-AFTRA is still striking, ongoing. So boo, hiss, but you know,
we're tomato, yeah, throwing tomatoes.
Hiss. but we're strike supporters, so we're like, you know, get these people paid.
Big time.
So same. Also prohibits us from speaking about any of your projects that are related to studio work. So
I can only apologize, but that sounds good. I appreciate it.
Where in the world are you right now?
Thank you for asking. I am in my favorite city in the world, in Bristol, which is in the West Country or West part of the country of England, which is a part of the United Kingdom. And it is where it's the city that I went to drama school in. And I'm going back to my drama school tomorrow to do a little session there.
What's the vibe there? What makes you feel so at home in that part of the country?
The thing I find amazing about the place is that it's a city that has got somewhat of a past, like Berlin. I suppose it has a dark history. It has but it is a place that is sort of in communication with itself, and the culture represents that, you know, culture, the people, but also art and all that. And I think that Bristol has that same thing here, if you really, really overthink it, which, you know, I tend to do on those things or anything. You can sort of find that, but also it's just great, man. There's so much going on. There's great places to drink. There's great places to eat, and just there's a lot going on. As I say, I was where I went to drama school, so my college or university. And so I whenever I come here, I'm just desperately reliving my youth and you know, clinging on to what it was like when I was younger.
We love the conversation and the walk with the younger self as well on this show. I'm curious, as somebody who participates in the gig economy, let's call it, we have conversations between ourselves about this, but whenever we're working really hard towards a massive project or a massive goal, you're focusing all your energy on one thing, be it a role, be it even a podcast interview, a golf tournament, whatever it might be. You pouring all of yourself into this thing, the project ends and it's over. For me, I get really low when that happens after something is finished. I question my self-worth. I question, am I going to work again? I think in the context of certainly like this strike that's ongoing right now, You're in a forced lull in working, right? I'm curious if what those sort of downtimes look like for you and sort of, you know, in between projects. And do you feel anything similar after a massive project has finished?
Dude, I appreciate you saying it, really, because I just feel bleak. I feel like the fact of the matter is, I suppose, in the sort of most stark terms, oftentimes when you finish a job, an acting gig, and you don't have something lined up, the fact of the matter is you are unemployed and sort of factually speaking, you don't have a job to go forward to. You could never have a job again.
Right.
It doesn't matter what sort of part you are in your career or whatever. The fact of the matter is you don't currently have a job. And so there is just this sort of existential fear of, oh no, what happens now? What happens now? Which I think is a sort of gateway into the fear of, well, what am I without that? And then it's sort of, you know, I think, see aforementioned overthinking of everything, it tends to lead to a sense of like, okay, well, if not work, what am I doing? How do I value myself? How do I have something interesting about me? Whatever it is in a sort of day to day life. It's sort of, you know, we have when you finish show, we call it post-show blues, because that purpose that you had during that time, and also just routine and friends that you saw when you're going in every day and doing a show, be that in the theater or like TV show, or you're doing film, whatever it is, you have this like passive friendship and passive purpose and passive like sort of drive. And I think even if that's just going in and I don't know, maybe you have like a line in the filming that day. Really, if you think about it, like you're not reinventing the wheel, you're not saving lives, but at least it's something where you're like, I woke up today, I went to work, and I was a part of something.
There was a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And so it's about reestablishing or recognizing for yourself what that purpose can be. And I find it really difficult. I find it difficult. And I think I'm very fortunate in that I myself am not a SAG member, but I support the people who are striking and I support the strikes. So, however, there are things that being a UK-based actor means that every now and then I can do bits of work on films that have a sort of specific waiver, independent films or something. So there are like bits that you can do throughout, but it really, regardless of that, it's still about finding ways to find purpose and value and like worthiness of self, which to be fair, you know, that's hard enough to do when I have a job because that's life.
So you mentioned that, you know, you're finding that kind of difficult. And I can relate. I think we all can to some extent. You know, there are times where you're like this deep questioning, like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. Who am I? Yeah. You know, what is the thing? Why is this happening? Why is this happening to me? You know, some people can, you know, fall into escapisms, be it, you know, substances or other people or their work or, you know, fill in the blank. But there are ways to soothe that. There are ways to satiate that, quiet that. Lately, I've found that, you know, playing some of my favorite music, throwing myself a little dance party, has been a way for me to kind of, because I go through that too, like in the golf industry, in the creative industry, like there are times where you're like, I may never work again. Mm-hmm. a brand may never hit me up ever again. We may never get another guest, and it'll just be the three of us talking to each other into the void, which is fine with me.
It should be great.
Perfectly fine. I love these two so much.
Of each other. Yeah.
I would give them a kidney tomorrow.
Nice. Connor's like, go on then.
Prove it.
Yeah.
I'm right here.
Yeah. I've been begging.
I'm good. I want
that. But we've got to find ways to like, to release the valve, right? Like to release some of that pressure, to give your brain a break. For me, that's like, you know, my one person dance party. Where are some of those bits for you? Like, do you find time to just do something for Phil that's like, you know what? This is a little bit overwhelming. I need to take the chopper out of here. You know, this low spot. I need to get in and hop out and just not think about this for a while. What does that look like for you?
The time specifically, there is playing football is or soccer is.
It's football.
Thank you. It's football. It is that incredible thing where you. I remember once I had broken up with a girlfriend. This is years ago. I broken up with a girlfriend and I was like heartbroken. And I remember going to this game that I still play at every Wednesday. And I was like, so like sad and like sodden and just like carrying the weight around of it. And I remember playing this game of football and like the quality was sort of fine, but it's with like people that I really like. I remember like halfway through 40 minutes, I went to go and get a drink and I just like looked at my phone. I sort of was like, huh. I haven't thought about her or anything outside of this, outside of like sweating a lot and like running after a ball. And it's so, and I'm sure that is a common denominator for you guys of just like, I don't know if it's focus or it is escapism, whatever it is, but it was just like a wonderful, and it's funny because I didn't realize until that moment when I looked at the thing and like that came crashing in then, but that is a specific example. And I feel like exercise or taking yourself out of the environment in which you find that drudgery, that sort of frustratedness, that, you know, literally removing yourself from that specific location, I think, can be a good thing. The key for me has been trying to find balance between vocational, emotional, and physical. So one a day of those things, at least. And if that's sending an email to a producer or my agent or whatever, you know, you've got to start the bar low, as I've often found with myself. It's like calling a friend or seeing them for coffee, or sometimes even just like texting them, going to the gym or like going for a walk, like doing the walk round the block or whatever. That any one of those things can be, you can start from there. And I find that so long as I get to the end of the day and I'm like, cool, I've done one of those things for those. And that's, I think, when I sort of, you know, in between work, I'm like, the answer that I've sort of tentatively come to when I'm going like, why is sort of, is sort of partially those three things in one extent or another.
One thing I've learned in therapy, and something I've tried to implement, is moving with my emotions. So in times of like really intense grief, and I know I need to move, like I cannot sit on this couch for another second. I cannot lay in this bed for another second. I need to get up and move my body. Like, do it sad.
Mm-mm.
Like,
right.
I feel like shit.
Yeah.
But yo, try to move with that and see how that changes things for you. Like, you don't have, it doesn't have to fix it. That's not the point. The point is like, I need to get some energy back through my body and like send this sadness, send this grief somewhere, because right now it's between my ears and it's driving me crazy. So like being able to move with sadness or happy, intense moments of happiness too. Shit, when I'm throwing a dance party, I'm lit. I'm like, I'm putting on Jay-Z. I'm rapping every single lyric. I'm putting on Prince. I'm dancing. Like, those moments are necessary. And in the sad times when I maybe don't feel like moving, I want to sing a sad song, I'm belting my fucking heart out.
Yeah.
So you'll move sadness to the grocery store. You'll like go to the grocery store sad.
I will shopping. Walk around the block sad. I will
just like
I will
Charlie
do sad
Brown.
Yoga.
Yeah, the Charlie Brown.
A literal cloud following you around. You're like, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm at today.
Lean the fuck in. I love that.
Yeah, lean the fuck in.
Yeah, and also I feel like you will be distracted. I feel like, you know, I am at the very best a child that is like, each thought is just this rattling toy that I'm like, and if you're literally like, if the rattling thing is just the sadness or the bleakness or whatever it is that day, you can just almost be like, yeah, I'm gonna go to the walk, I'll go for a walk. And like, sometimes it is just going to a shop and being like, huh, I haven't seen, oh yeah, maybe I could make that if I have that can of beans and some tuna and some balsamic vinegar. I got some nice balsamic vinegar. It's sort of like, you can literally just like,
hey, we're not asking him the champions dinner question. If that's what's on the menu, Doug, we're not.
Breakfast beans and balsamic.
I have to disclose something, Phil. So all of my family lives in the UK and I go over regularly, and a smiley face breakfast is always on my table when I'm visiting my grandparents' house.
Right.
Baked beans as the hair. These two are relentless shit givers about beans in the morning, about beans on toast, about beans generally, English
can't
beans. And it drives me, it's the one gripe that I think could tear us apart.
I think it's the only beef we have.
It's the only, for real. It's the only issue that we have.
Okay. There's a couple of things there.
So please defend
I'd like
beans.
I'd just like to go back really quickly to my beans comment. My beans wasn't specifically about baked beans. I was thinking more three bean salad. You're talking humble, perhaps a chickpea, a red kidney bean, maybe even a black eyed pea. And you've got that. And I wouldn't be going tuna and baked bean. I just want to put that clear for the record. Okay. And secondly, I don't know what it is that you would, I think maybe it is, what role does, sort of culinarily, what role does the baked bean have over in the US? Because I can't really imagine, or is it more just
barbecue,
a barbecue
food?
Bean?
Barbecue, yeah. Food. Barbecue.
Throw a ham hock in my shit.
Or if you're in Boston, it's a cauldron of beans that is usually served with Frankenfurters.
So yeah. American. I love it. A cauldron of beans. Do you want a bowl of beans? No, I want a cauldron.
A cauldron. a cast iron cauldron.
right.
That spells have been brewed in.
We haven't got a cauldron. Would you like a trough? I'll take a trough of beans.
A vat, please. Yeah.
Yeah, a vat.
Something wicked this way comes and it's these beans.
Yeah. I would like a cask of beans.
A flagon of beans. Okay. Are you an English breakfast person though? Are you a fan of
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Love it. I will defend it. I will defend also your choice of bean. I will also defend your grandparents making it the hare.
Thank you.
There are obviously now in today's world, there's a lot going on with today's world, but mostly brunch has probably become the biggest thing of today's world. And so brunch, I'd say, has been a real nemesis of the sort of the humble full English. Because when you're talking full English, you're talking like black pudding. You've got lovely hash browns, but it can get quite intense. It can get quite heavy. And I feel like brunch is more of like a cute version of it, where you've got like a waffle or a pancake or something. So I have historically been a full English dude, but I try not to eat as much meat now, and it's pretty much mostly meat on that plate.
Fair play.
If you ever go to Scotland, do have a full Scottish.
With oatcakes and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, your example about the going to play football for 45 minutes and having that escape ties really well into golf as it happens. And as a beginner, I'm so excited for you to find those moments of escape through golf. Mm. I hope it happens, because I can say for the three of us, you know, those three buckets you mentioned, what was it? Vocation, physical, and emotional. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. For us, thankfully, being on the golf course kind of accomplishes all three of those, fulfills all three of those buckets. At the very minimum, anyone playing golf can accomplish two of those three buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And for 4 hours or 5 hours.
Or six if you're in LA.
Six if you're in LA. You can become solely focused on walking forward. Your phone is away. You're side by side with two or three people that you either don't know at all and you're learning about, or that you know very well and you're finding out something new about, and focused on a very simple task: get a ball in a hole. But it becomes this like frustratingly simple, but hopelessly complicated at the same time. And I'm so stoked for you to like engage in that activity as a form of positive escape, healthy escape. What has been your relationship with golf like thus far? How did it come into your life? What was the entry point?
The entry point was probably crazy, as it were. We're talking early doors, sort of crazy golf. That's how I sort of was first introduced to it. But golf, it's because a friend of mine recently got married, and his father-in-law is a big, big golf dude.
Mm.
And so he was like, let's go to the driving range. And my dad had sort of briefly taught me when I was younger the very basic techniques of swinging them clubs, and we really, really, my friend and I and our other friends, who we sort of meet every other week, after a while you find that you're swinging, and you're kind of like, the thing that you thought you were there for, which was the playing of the golf, is actually a thing of just to see each other. And the lovely thing that happens, and I think, you know, I'm sure that it's specific to whoever the group of people that goes is dependent upon, is that you know, it's a really supportive thing. It's a really supportive trio. And I think, if nothing else, it's just a nice exercise to be around two other guys who are supportive of what you're doing. And you're like, ah, that's a really shit shot. And they're like, hey, man, great, well done. You're like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, you know, you did that bit well. And you're like, I'll take it. And we're graduating to a sort of pitch and putt vibe.
Nice.
Love it.
Yeah. They've been on a few sojourns with said father-in-law, and I've unfortunately have been busy during those times, but I am ready to pitch and or putt. But certainly, as you say, it seems to be the most incredibly complicated thing and infuriating thing. I think one of the things that I'm really excited about has been that I told someone I was starting to play golf, and he said, it's just, and I was like, oh man, that maxim, I think maybe one of the best maxims that I've heard. He was like, just remember, don't hit the ball, swing the club. And I was like, shit. it's kind of got nothing to do with the hitting of the ball, the end result, the whatever you want to, however you want to extrapolate that. It's kind of got nothing to do with the process. The process is just swing the club. And I'm sure you guys are like, yeah, there's a lot of other things to think about, sure. But I just thought that for a thick guy like me, I was like, that's a really lovely, lovely way of talking about a process, and focusing on the thing that is not the end goal. And so, yeah. And so even just that going along, the next time I went along, I just really enjoyed doing that, focusing on that part of it.
Shit, I love that.
That's such a good point. Yeah. Because it's so true. Like even the swinging of the club we've talked about is sort of irrelevant as well. It's, you know, like I said, you're on the golf course for 5 to 6 hours. If you're in LA, you're hitting over the course of that time, your body is in motion, hitting a golf shot for maybe 15 minutes of those 5 hours.
Right.
It's the time in between the shots that is the most fulfilling. It's where you're focused on the other people that you're with. You're focused on yourself. You're focusing on your breath. You're walking. You're listening to music. That's the process, and that's where the education comes from. Yeah. The moment of impact is irrelevant.
Yeah, I wonder, does it feel particularly different when you are playing on your own? Does one play on their own? Does one golf on their own? They must do, surely.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like on occasion, it's rare, but when it happens,
yeah, it's a special moment.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Solo swing. Go for solo swing.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, like I said earlier, we talk a lot about the conversation with the younger self. And a question that we ask a lot of our guests on this program is, if you had an opportunity to play a round of golf with a younger version of yourself, what would the conversation be like on the course? And the three of us put that into practice from time to time. And that's an opportunity when you're playing by yourself to envision a younger version of yourself walking alongside you and playing with you and sort of simulating some of those conversations of healing from old trauma or thinking about what 8-year-old me was into, what music I was listening to, what cartoons I was watching. What Lego project I had just completed and was fucking stoked about.
Wait, which
for some reason, I imagine
current day.
Yeah.
Millennium Falcon.
for some reason, I imagine you watching Bobby's World, but I feel like that predates you.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't think he's old. He's too young for that. Yeah.
Drew, you don't know what that is.
Yeah, we know Bobby's World. Just to piggyback off of Connor's question, you know, with you being in Bristol and in your college town, you know, what would that conversation even look like with that version of yourself that was, you know, had aspirations to be an actor or, you know, work in film or TV or, you know, where you've been today? Like what would that conversation even look like? Cause that's obviously a different conversation than talking with the 8-year-old Phil.
Well, the first thing would probably be, I saw you cheat, put the ball back. Probably the first thing that I'd say to myself. No more mulligans. That's a phrase that I've definitely picked up, is mulligan.
And everyone else can see you cheating too. You're not sly. Like, you're not slick. You're not fooling anyone.
Exactly. We know. We know.
We all know.
It's okay.
Everyone knows.
I have a really bad memory, and I wish that I was better at remembering things. I wish that I journaled stuff down. I wish that I got into a habit of journaling more, because I feel like that's such a good practice, such a good muscle to flex, build, whatever one does with that memory muscle. And I think, but more the thing behind that is taking that in. I guess there would be some that would suggest that that is like being in the moment. I don't think that that phrase really sort of chimes with me. I think that it's, I get it, and I'm, you know, that's great if that works, but I think it's more just like, it goes, time just goes, man. Just take it, just enjoy it for what it is. Mm-hmm. And I spent so long going, but what about there? What about, and I do, I mean, we all do, I'm sure, go, okay, this is great and everything, but you know, what about over there? And you just find that, like, even if the place that you're in now is like rubbish, it's still the place that you're in now. Mm-hmm. And you're like, but this is exist. I don't know. This is your life. And
yeah, it's a blessing.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And particularly, I mean, to be fair, I spend most of my time sort of reliving the moments that I had when I was here, just desperately trying to cling on to it. But I spend a lot of time in my mind palace in Bristol. You know, particularly when you're at college, you're going, the reason you're there is to sort of build yourself a good foundation for your future. So it's hard not to be thinking about the future. Yeah. And particularly when you're at drama school, you're like, oh man, we're doing like an excerpt from a play, but I'm like, I just would love to be in a play, to have a job where I'm in a play. Mm-hmm. And that's great. And that excitement is a wonderful thing. And I'm so glad that I had that. You can still want those things and you can still be thinking of that next step or 10 steps, whatever, and enjoy where you are, what's going on around you, who you're with. I think just write it down. It's probably like a really simplified version of it. Just, and even if that's, you know, you can extrapolate that term to enjoy it for what it is. I think that there's something in that, but I also think that I am bad at sometimes just sitting down and doing the work, just do it, like reading the thing. And I think so often I go, yeah, but is this the right thing to be doing? Shouldn't I be doing like that thing, which, you know, or is this the right place to be? Shouldn't I be over there? And rather than just like committing to doing a thing, to reading a book or to, I don't know, doing your taxes or whatever, not having that, trying to find a way of not like of making peace with that and not feeling like the itchy feet of going like, oh, I should be with them. Is this the right person? Yeah. You know, is this the right, you know, person to be right now? And just being like, dude, just, it's fine. Just chill out.
Taxes are overrated anyways.
Agreed.
Taxes are, exactly. Yes.
We have a very special announcement. In our partnership with Movember, the three shrinks, Bradford, Drew, and Connor, are going to be linking up the link of all links in beautiful, sometimes rainy, Los Angeles, California on November 15th for our first ever official group golf therapy hit and giggle.
Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, where's the sound bar? Give me a sway bomb.
I'm so excited for that, Joe.
It's going to be very, very fun. So on November 15th, we'll be playing golf with 40 of our best friends to raise money and support for Movember, changing the face of men's health one mustache at a time.
Make sure that you go into the show notes of this episode for a link to the event page. There, you'll get more information about Movember and you'll get a link to donate to the Movember Foundation. It is a good cause, y'all. Trust and believe. They are putting their money where their mouth is. They are changing the face of men's health. An ideal partner for us, truly. And I would be remiss not to say happy birthday to Father Shrink.
Hey,
Drew Westfall.
Thank you.
The reason we are here today is because of that man.
It's true.
And he deserves his flowers. Drew, you are a leader. You are a champion. You are a supporter. You are a father. You are a friend. You are a brother. I love you with all my heart. Happy birthday.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. And now, back to our conversation with Phil Dunster.
sounds like you've built in a little challenge for yourself now, though, that you're in Bristol. Like, you know, you're calling these things out. Like, you know, I'm really, I need to work on journaling, or need to work on taking it in. Shit, you're there now.
Yeah, right.
Leave yourself a voice memo. Hey, I'm walking through the courtyard right now, and I noticed this old building that hasn't changed in 12 years. That's incredible. Mm. I used to, you know, I don't know what you used to do. You know what I'm saying? But like, I used to I used to help old ladies across the street over there.
Bang on.
Yeah. And it reminds me of that time. And boy, I had a really hard exam that week and I was really stressed. Yeah. But look at us now, baby.
Right. Yeah. And I think
it's that time travel, it's important.
It's been really nice sending photos of places on the walk here to my That's friends beautiful. Going, oh man, I'm so hungover that day. And do you remember that? do you remember that time? Really
remember that old lady we hopped across the street?
Yeah. That was wild.
Yeah, I feel really sorry for the students I'm going to see tomorrow, because I'm just going to be like this old man turning up being like, how about
hello,
you?
Fellow kids.
Like, who the hell is this guy, this sad man? Like, I've moved with the sad, all right? I did what I was told.
You moved with the sad.
I've brought it to
no,
you
got to give yourself more credit than that. They're going to be stoked.
See how they feel by the end. But yeah, I'm excited to go, certainly.
I want to ask you about how, if at all, therapy fits into your life. Do you have a therapeutic practice, even if it's not a traditional relationship with a therapist? What are some outlets or tools that you use to stay regulated and not get overstimulated? You know, it sounds like sport plays into your life in a big way, but yeah, how does therapy fit into your life?
Well, it's now going to be doing a one-person dance party.
Excellent.
That's what I've been taught in those
Hell
ways.
Yeah.
I have a therapist that it has been quite hard to see them because I don't enjoy doing therapy over Zoom. And this is talking therapy. I guess it would be CBT therapy, I think. I don't actually really know. And I really struggle to do it over Zoom because I think it is about extracting oneself from the headspace and literal location, and I don't enjoy doing it from home. So they are now on the other side. I moved to the other side of London, and so they're there. So my process of therapy was going to a therapist's office and having a session with them, which I just think is the most wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so easy to be smug and condescending about therapy, I think, especially to people who don't do it. You're just like, oh, man, it's the best. It's so amazing. But and I'm sure that there are people who just wouldn't work for. But I have found that the sort of analogy that I found best for going to a therapist and having a talking therapy was that my mind feelings are this knot of string that have just been all tied and mashed up, and it's about one by one taking each one of those strings and going, right, let's look at this. Okay, that's that one. And then you go back and you take one really slowly out, and then you look at that one, and then you put it on the table. And it might well be that goes back into the mush, but like at least you know which those component parts are. And that's sort of a cornerstone in terms of learning how to label them, wrap words around those feelings, I think. I think finding good literature, I think, has been a really incredibly therapeutic thing for me in terms of understanding my own mind and maybe potentially giving me a bridge towards other people's. I'm sure that you guys, I'd love to know who your gurus are, but mine is Alain de Botton, who is School of Life. There are books that he's read that sort of reach through the pages and shine a light on a thing that I thought was something that I only experienced. And it's this sort of ineffable thing that I would never be able to express or verbalize, and yet here it is in a book, and suddenly I feel connected with the world, and I feel connected. And maybe it's not so weird that I feel this thing, or selfish, or arrogant, or maybe it is. And also, that's okay, so long as you identify those things. And my girlfriend as well. I think that she is the most emotionally articulate and available person that I've ever met. She is somebody who will always be that version of the Alain de Botton book, is that in sort of personified. And so, you know, somewhere between those things and having great friends who I'm very fortunate, the people who I went to drama school with, I'm still very, very good friends with. And we're a bunch of soppy people who love to tell each other how, you know, what we're going through. And I think we've learned through that. And also, again, with actors can often be good at sharing vulnerability. The best people that I know at it, and the thing that I have tried to take on board for myself, is starting and sharing with a vulnerability whereby you go, if you feel like there is something that somebody wants to say, or that, you know, they're struggling to upset, finding your own version of a vulnerability and basically going, you put it on the table and the two of you are like, huh, okay, yeah, okay. So that's where the bar is. And so the other person, it's like, and I say this only because I have friends who are really fucking good at doing that, and then you suddenly feel like, ah, okay, I know that I've been like caged up here and I can't really say the thing that I want to say, or I don't even know what that thing is. And it's just a way in of, and I don't even think that they know they do it, but so I guess literal therapy, reading about good practice, and being fortunate to have those people in my life who I can practice or learn that practice with, I guess. Do you guys have a guru or someone that you like go, ah, yeah, that's good?
Yeah, I've had my guy for years. He's a comedian named Pete Holmes.
Uh-huh.
And Pete Holmes and I do not look anything alike. However, we've had very, very similar experiences with our upbringing and where we are as adults, and like reckoning with our upbringing and the burnout from that. And the way that he articulates it in his comedy is just, it's so therapeutic to me. It's so healing. I've been listening to his podcast for like 7 years.
Yeah.
It's my absolute favorite thing in the world. Like, I hope to meet that man, because I'm he talks about where he lives, but I'm like, bro, I'm right down the street.
Yeah,
like,
right here.
I need to bump into you somewhere. I will probably melt if I ever meet that man.
This is the fear I'd have if I met him. I'd be like, and just ruin it.
Yeah, that's the sound I would make.
Well, that must be interesting from your perspective, Phil, as well. If people have that kind of parasocial relationship with you as an actor who's been in shows and films that they've seen, and certainly one in particular that won't go named here because of aforementioned strike, that has taught people a lot about.
There you go.
Oh, excuse me. What? Oh. Are those Brent? Those are sick. Oh, God.
Damn.
Those are
audio,
fire.
Audio medium.
By the way.
It's an audio medium.
It's an audio medium.
Yeah.
Well, good. Because then I won't get sick.
Yeah,
then
you won't
get
say.
In trouble.
Yeah. No, it's safe here.
You were looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
You got my back. Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Has that been an interesting transition to be, for a long time, a fan and a consumer, perhaps an admirer of people who you see on stage and screen, to now be one of those people and potentially have, you know, folks stop you in the street or at the grocery store? And because that particular program was so mindful and so empathetic and conscious of language and emotion. Mm-hmm. What has that transition been like? Again, not even related to that show, but just you now as a public person, where people might be, you know, spilling their guts to you, for example, or sharing trauma with you potentially because they think, oh, this, you know, he gets it. We have this type of relationship.
Yeah. It's a really complicated thing, because it's wonderful. It's lovely. And there is an element to me that, I guess, you know, if you do think of that young guy who's at drama school going, God, I just wish, then of course it's a wonderful thing to think in some way that it is some validation that it, and that is a base feeling. I think it's a thing that almost feels dirty to even kind of think about as being this like, ah, yeah, great. And yet the more that it happens, and again, I can't stress how like genuinely grateful for the, you know, sure, like hard work that I have done at the hands of many brilliant people around me and teachers, but also the luck, because that really is just what it comes down to in so many cases along the way. It is also, it has nothing to do with me. It is somebody else in their life that has had that experience or has seen the show or film or whatever it is. And it is their life in a moment of their life. It is not something that should, I try not to see it as something that is a culmination of my actions. It is something that is their own life in a moment that they have. And it kind of has nothing to do with me. I think what I'm trying to get at basically is a different guru, Brené Brown, if you've heard of her. She talks about the notion of being in the ring. And I think this is probably, I'm probably getting it all wrong, but what I took from it was the notion that if they compliment you, if they are somebody who sees you for your good parts, they can bolster you. They are, there's probably like five, six, no, maybe one, two of those people, maybe five or six, who knows, who those like close group of people are, who know you, who've seen you, who understand you. And the same would go for the people who would denounce you, who would criticize you, who would, you know, call you out on certain things. Of course, this is more like I'm talking in sense of like your achievements or like the things that you have done on screen. I'm not talking about like, you know, like cancelable things. I'm talking about like just you in your life and your job, whatever. Someone doesn't like a performance that you did. Somebody thought that you were great in a thing. If they're not within that sort of circle, it's a wonderful thing, or it's, you know, perhaps they are entitled to their feelings, but it has nothing to do with you. And I think that way insanity lies, when you start to believe that it does, because I think that it is a really seductive and bottomless pit where you suddenly, because it's like, you know, it's amazing for your ego when you walk into a room and people are like, someone, the odd moment it happens and someone's like, oh my God, you see
fucking
that looking
yeah,
at
us. He's yeah. here.
And you turn to your friend and you're like, you see this shit? Yeah. I've been telling you about this. And, you know, and it happens, you know, and it happens a few times and a few times and a few times. And then you realize that it just does not matter to you as a person, and if it does, then I'm concerned. So if that all is to sound incredibly ungrateful and unappreciative of the fact that people are just trying to say, hey man, I saw you do a thing and I thought it was great, and that is lovely and it's, and that is cool, and you know, hopefully that is a sort of foundation on which I'm able to work in the future. I don't know, I don't really know how it works, but also I think that you know, the thing at the foundation, if it was like vocational, emotional and physical and also egotistical, then I think that that would be a concern. I think that would be worrying. Yeah, but that doesn't really play into those three things, the sort of super self-aggrandizing three pillars of like how I try to, you know, go about my day-to-day life. Because also the thing is, it is incredibly fickle. That in and of itself, people
clearly
seeing that is incredibly fickle. And but that being said, I just remember Ian McKellen, Sir Ian McKellen,
thank you,
spoke of, thank you, spoke about like the notion of which, of course, in his case, is incredibly different to mine, but of being famous or of having some renown. And he was like, it's just nice to walk in a room and people want to speak to you, because, you know, it's hard enough walking into any room, whether you're going to a room of friends or a room of people you don't know. I think that it is, you know, in some sense, like try to take something nice out of it. It's like people go, like I say, I saw the thing you did and that's wonderful. It's like for you guys, I'm sure you have that. People come up to you or they tell you about it and you're like, hey, thanks, man. You care. You gave a shit enough to come.
It's relentless. We get stopped all the time, and it's become a hassle.
It's really tough. Yeah.
Page six. We're all over.
Yes, guys, please. I don't care about you. It means nothing to me.
Give me some room. I fucking do this for me.
I'm walking here.
I'm walking here.
Yeah. But no, I feel I should stress, and maybe I should have precursed this to the fact that, like, particularly for that the show that we had perhaps alluded to, for it to happen on something like that has been the genuine, and it sounds like a platitude, honor of my sort of career, vocational life, that it could be through that, because I'm so, so very deeply, molecularly proud of it, that the fact that it's being, you know, if that recognition comes from something like that, I'm like, that's great. I'll always have that. And, you know, if nothing ever happens, if I do truly never get another job, I'm like, what a wonderful thing that leads to that. But maybe I'm sailing a little too close to the wind here, but
that it didn't come from you know, the supporting role you played in Boner Boys 3 or whatever, you know. Like, there's a degree of meritocracy that has matriculated through audiences where they're like, recognize, like, that shit was dope. That was meaningful and important, and not some, you know, crack kind of
some bullshit
comedy.
I love the notion of being a supporting role in Boner Boys 3.
Yeah,
supporting. What are you doing in Boner Boys 3? I was, you know, so you know the Boner Boys.
Just their mate's
girlfriend's brother. That's
heroin addict brother. Yeah.
I'm Kevin.
That's it.
Also, permission to use molecularly. That was
Is that a word? I don't know. I said
it. Oh, so it's good.
Beautiful. It is now. Add it to the glossary of terms.
It's very fitting. Well, Phil, we really appreciate how raw and honest you were about your, you know, your life and just how you see things. That's why we appreciate this platform that we have. It's, you know, like you said, we're a mental health podcast masquerading as a golf podcast. We don't talk about golf very much on this show, which is, you know, might be hard to believe with the name of the show. But we really appreciate that. I wanted to switch gears in a effort to respect your time. We do have a few questions that we like to ask all of our guests. And we're very excited to know your answers as a newer to golf person. Obviously you have some killer headphones on. I'm sure you enjoy listening to some tunes from time to time. So you're going to a golf tournament and they play a walk-up song when you tee off on the first tee. What would be your walk-up song that either pumps you up or calms you down?
It may well be the same as my go-to karaoke song, is Dancing in the Moonlight by Top Loader. I don't know if anyone's going to get pumped up or chilled out by it, but I think people will just be grooving to it, and that's what
grooving.
I want from my golf tournament.
And it'll mean something to you, and that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I'll just rock up sort of just bobbing my head, feeling good, feeling fresh. I would be terrible. I'd like ping it into the clubhouse, but I'd be like but everyone's dancing with it.
Hey, I had a soundtrack while I was doing it.
My life is a movie.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. Okay, we're going to add that to the... So we have a playlist of everyone who's ever come on the show and given that answer. Yes.
We'll what's been the most surprising, would you say?
You know what's funny? We've had three different Tears for Fears entries.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the new wave genre has gotten a lot of love on our playlist, which we're fans of all of it, but that's been surprising. We got the same, so we recorded two podcasts in one day one time,
and we got
the same song both.
This is
in a simulation kind of shit.
These people do not know each other.
No
ties other than golf.
Yeah.
And they picked the same song. And it was Tupac.
Ambitions of a Rider.
Tupac.
That's
good. I was wondering if it was going to be like Ave Maria or something.
So probably the most unhinged answer we've gotten was the Korn song.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
corn.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
cone.
It's cone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has
yeah.
the
that
juice.
Was,
that, it
has, it yeah, that's rough.
The that, it has the juice. He's not wrong.
Oh, man. I wish. Why are you so boring, Phil? Why didn't you go to the corn song? For fuck's sake.
I just hope that kid's doing okay.
Me too.
Yeah. Somebody
for real,
him.
For real.
Yeah.
Protect the corn
protect
kid.
Protect the corn kid.
Oh,
Tariq.
This is not a standard meat and potatoes question, but I'm curious to hear your answer, Phil. If you were blessed with the athletic gifts of to be the best in any one sport, mm-hmm. what sport would it be, and what competition would you want to succeed in? Play for England and win a World Cup in football or in rugby. Win a Premier League with AFC Richmond. AFC Wimbledon. We'll keep it AFC Wimbledon. My dad is a big Finney Jones fan.
Nice. Geyser.
Or win a Ryder Cup or the Masters.
I would like to win the Masters in cornhole competition.
Yo. Okay.
I'm going to be honest, I've never played cornhole before in my life, but it's fucking amazing.
But that's just a funny answer. Yeah, that's great.
That's a funny answer. Sure. I mean, you know, I'll let you be the judge of that. But to be honest, the sport that I've always been like, ah, man, if my life had been different, probably Formula One, probably win.
Ooh,
the.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just because it's so cool. And
it's so sick.
Yeah.
There's 20 of them in the world.
Yeah, man, it's so insane.
It's insane.
It's so insane. And I'm sure
there are only 20 drivers in the world?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Time, yeah. Yeah. And
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know jack shit about Formula One. I don't know the first.
Yeah, we didn't. I didn't watch that.
I know
doc,
Lewis
yeah.
Hamilton.
Yeah, watch the doc and
it.
You will be into it. And only
okay.
most of them have ego issues, you know.
Okay.
Only most of them.
I mean, 20
or
in the world.
Daddies.
That's yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You. Yeah.
You get a big
one of them ones.
Yeah.
So you haven't spent a ton of time on the golf course, but if you can reflect back on the amount of time that you have spent on a golf course, what are some of your favorite golf smells?
Probably the glove, the leather bit of the glove.
Cabrera
that's
leather.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it
that's
every
good shit.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That smell. Do we want to do other senses?
Sound is a good one too. We like to
sound
know golf sounds.
Really good one.
Favorite golf
okay.
sounds.
Okay. Obviously the sweet talk of club on ball, but it's so rare that it happens with me. it's probably the when you're on a driving range and you hit the button for the balls to come down, it's like scabba da bobba da bobba da bobba da bobba.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. I'm gonna isolate your mic. I need you to do that one more time.
Yeah.
It's jazz, baby.
Daddy O.
That's great. Scabbada babbada. Yeah, that's a good one.
And sights is that bull hit in that hole.
I was gonna ask, like, sight wise, where's the most beautiful place you've played, or you know, something you saw on a golf course, you were like, wow, it is beautiful here.
To the site of friendship, probably. The site of seeing my boys.
Yeah.
So seeing my boys.
Man.
I love it.
You know what I mean? You just like.
You get the brief. Too. You understood it.
It's great.
Yes, you did. You got the assignment.
Yeah.
This is a good question as a newer golfer. And maybe we can guess the answer, but what is your biggest golf fear?
That I will just give up on it, I think. I'll be like, man, I will have one too many times where I'm like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. And just give up on it. And it'll be like, on to the next thing.
That's fair. I will say this. I don't think you're a real golfer until you've quit at least once.
That's true. That's
and then
true.
We all come crawling back because we're just degenerates at the end of the day.
Sure. Yeah.
we quit golf. Thank you. So we started a podcast.
Correct. Yeah.
That's how we found each other.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Let's say the your walk-up song plays, you get up there, you play a lights out tournament, you win the damn thing. You get invited back next year and they host a champions dinner in your honor. What is on your champions dinner menu?
Baked beans and tuna.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, great. All right, I'm here for it.
A cauldron
of beans. Yeah. A cauldron of beans.
A pigsty of beans.
Yeah. What is on that? It's going to be like, like aubergine sort of thing, eggplant, as y'all would say. Some like sort of Mediterranean, you've got some amazing fish. And everyone can, but the main thing is that people are just sharing them plates. You know, when people are like, can you pass the thing?
Mm-hmm.
You get chatting to the person. Family That's what style. I love about it, we man. Love That's that. It. Some labneh, some tabbouleh, bit of that.
A baba ganoush, perhaps?
Dare I say tzatziki? There might be even some of that.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, bit of that. Love that sort of stuff. Love that stuff.
It's all Greek to me.
There you go.
What a spread.
Yeah.
And that fish that still has the head on, you're like, it's disgusting, but I'll eat it, you know.
Give me the eyes.
You know.
Give me the cheeks.
Give it to me. Give me the
cheeks.
Let me get
in there. Fish cheeks.
Seriously. I want to know where this fish has been.
Yeah, I must suck that thing clean. Shit.
Connor edits the podcast, so.
And we're gone. And it's gone. Final question for me, but what are some goals or intentions you have for the coming year or period of time, season of your life with regards to your mental health?
Journal more, for sure. Write it down. I think that there is so much, and again, this is a Brené Brown thing, the notion of the shitty first draft, where you externalize your feeling, thought process, understanding of a situation. And it's one of those things, and I'm sure you guys, I don't know, maybe you don't, but there are so many practices where you're like, that's so fucking good. I don't know why I don't do that. Or you tell other people, you're like, about this thing that's really good. And they're like, oh my God, that's great. And they do it and it changes their life. And you're like, why don't I do that? It's literally, it's right there for me to do. And I don't do that. So I think that it's just a good way of, also just like time travels so fast, isn't it? But it's a good way of just taking stock, I suppose. So there's so many wonderful things that I feel very lucky to have in my life that I'm like, oh, why don't I just enjoy it, man? Particularly during these strikes, I'm like, I've got like nothing but time during the day. And I'm like, God, how do I fill it? Rather than being like, isn't that amazing? How fortunate.
Yeah. Or allow yourself to be bored.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. See what comes
that's
from
huge.
That.
That's a hard one. That's great.
Phil.
Well, guys.
This has been surreal and really fun and insightful.
It's been great, man. Thank you, dude. I'd love to hear your process on how you eat fish as well.
One more time. Take it from the top.
That'll be a visual only medium.
Yeah, we
not an
right,
audio.
Right.
Yeah, you got a
tutorial
for that one.
Video coming soon.
Yeah,
smash that subscribe.
Smash that subscribe button.
Smash it. Smash it. God, the internet.
Patreon only.
Guys, I've had a lovely time though. I really appreciate this space. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a really great thing, and I think that there's so many things about it that just destigmatizes. And also, like having it on the backdrop of sport, I think is an important thing because they are not two things that seemingly go together. And I think it's a really smart thing that you guys are doing. And I think also, I know that we're doing this alongside of our friends at Movember, and there's such a good app or program that you can go on and look at on there, which was the basically how to have conversations with your friends, how to have difficult conversations with your friends. And I genuinely was like, this is how pathetic I am. The sort of hairs on the back of my neck stood up because I was like, where has this been? This is amazing. And, I feel like I'm pretty good at having those conversations with my friends, but I'm like, no, man, this is such a brilliant tool and a way to, which sounds like I'm really like, brown nosing Movember, but I genuinely think it's a really excellent thing that they've done. And I think that as many people, but I think men who find it difficult, to engage on those things, who want to talk to their friends about those things, who want to open up or want to like help them open up, but don't really know how. I think it's just an amazing tool. I think it's great. So I think I would recommend your lovely listeners to also go and check that out as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for
100%.
That. Couldn't agree more. We appreciate your vulnerability and honesty throughout your work and throughout this time with us. This would be a cracking foursome. So hopefully the next time the three of us get overseas to the UK, be it Bristol, be it London, be it perhaps Scotland, we can make something happen. Because that'd be a lot of fun.
Let's get a round in, guys. Let's get a bloody round in, for God's sake.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Phil.
Bye, guys. Bye.